Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Hey, friendo, Steve here.
And Lars.
Yeah, welcome back to our newest Dark Side of the Ring review. This time, the UWF Dark Side of the Ring Cocaine and Cowboy Boots, the Herb Abrams story. This was, of course, about the UWF.
Yes.
Stood for United Wrestling Federation? Is that what it was?
Universal.
Universal Wrestling Federation.
Universal Wrestling Federation, yeah. So apparently this started to crystallize in the mind of Herb Abrams in the late 80s, early 90s. It's interesting to see here that the genesis of it and his initial recruitment pitch happened at a wrestling convention, one of the very first ones.
I like that you use the word the crystallize in his mind, because it's not the only crystals in his mind. There's a lot of cocaine. I didn't take a single note, because
nor
I think
I.
that there's kind of a more interesting conversation to be had about competition for the WWF in general than this story is a very simple one. It's a guy who loved to party. He loved people. People loved him. That's one thing that I thought that the documentary in general didn't get across until they talked about his death.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was surprised. I mean, I'm just fast forwarding the end here. He died in spectacularly scandalous fashion in a fit of cocaine seeming rage of some sort.
Yeah.
A baseball bat, and then he had a heart attack or whatever.
I mean, he was all like oiled, like he was covered in Vaseline or baby oil or something.
Yeah.
Like that.
And what struck me was how I got teary eyed seeing Steve Ray, not to be confused with Booker T's brother, with Steve Ray crying, saying this guy believed in me. And then the other guy, I forget his name, who was his like right hand man or whatever.
Oh, Lenny. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, he was crying. And I mean, he died like 20 years ago or 25 years ago now.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't really get to the point during the documentary how much he was loved to generate that reaction in people.
Yeah, they laid out a bunch of reasons why he would not be loved.
Right,
stiffing
yeah.
people on money, putting people in really awkward and uncomfortable situations, being naked constantly. things that might, to certain people, rub them the wrong way. And that was kind of established. So when at the end of the episode, when you see these really intense, genuine emotional reactions, just talking about his death 25 plus years ago, they didn't exactly lay the groundwork. I mean, like, I know that guy Lenny talked about how, you know, they were best friends for years and years and years and years, even before, I believe, Herb Abrams started the UWF.
Mm-hmm.
So that's like the only inclination we get that on a personal social level that any of these people were really close.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
you know, given the circumstances of the basically everything about UWF, it's shocking that as many people stuck around as long as what they did.
Yeah. When he said they were still in the office in like 96, I was like, how is that possible?
There's got to be some intense personal connections made for people to stick through it that long. You know, first show they have in Florida in this Civic Center, and a couple hundred people show up, you know, and it would seem pretty obvious at that point. This ain't going anywhere.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
This thing's DOA, you know?
Yeah.
And then, stick it out and come back around a year later, do the show in Vegas, and the same thing happens, which is, you know, they made it seem the documentary that was the de facto end of the promotion.
Mm-hmm.
But that being said, it still seems like through all his hijinks, through all the crazy stuff he did, through all the instances of him stiffing people money, people still just like the guy.
Yeah. And that did seem to be the missing piece of the puzzle. Is that you see, you have to infer all this stuff, which is not really probably the approach you want to get from a documentary, because there's so much cocaine And there's so many hooker stories, and there's so many stories about him stiffing people on their pay, which is a much bigger issue.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of pictures of him with a lot of smiling people. And he comes across as a guy that has an infectious personality. And I mm-hmm. think that's what it is. But they never really gave us any stories about how that sort of was his selling point. Because mm-hmm. he had to have some sort of selling point beyond just, hey, I've got a lot of money and I'm making a go mm-hmm. of this thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was, you know, him telling Steve Ray, hey, I'm going to make you a star. We're going to make a lot of money together.
Yeah.
What also kind of not really surprised me, I guess, but especially because it was like back in the late 80s, early 90s, was just how, you know, somebody comes up to you and they have a lot of money. Hey, I'm going to make you a star. Just how many people like sort of buy in? You know, it's like, oh, he's got money. It took that guy talking to Bruno, the convention mm-hmm. organizer, talking to mm-hmm. Bruno, to Bruno,
to make sure the guy that he was legit. Yeah, but I mean, this his ability to get, you know, Dr. Death, to get Paul Orndorff,
Andre,
to get Andre, even just for a appearance. Yeah. I mean, you know, I to get Bruno involved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
His ability to talk to these people and convince them that this isn't some fly by night thing. He's serious about this and he's mm-hmm. invested in it.
Yeah.
It's pretty darn impressive.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, it was, there's a lot of comical stories. I mean, the final bit where they talked about his death, and it's this tragic thing, but obviously it's steeped in just in dark humor because nobody even really knows exactly how he died. They just sort of surmise he was either in the back of a cop car, it was either an inside jail. It was either, you know, on the spot when the cops are trying to arrest him. It was one of those things. Mm-hmm. Regardless, he was hepped up on cocaine and his heart probably exploded. That's probably mm-hmm. what happened here. But, you know, all the silly reenactment out of focus stuff, and they still like pixelate out his junk, his hog.
I know.
And they go through every scenario that people are thinking of. And I'm like, this is the funniest reenactment of a death I've ever seen in my life. And it's so darkly comical, but it's very fitting for him because obviously that's the life he led.
As is B. Brian Blair's statement that he died doing the two things he loved.
Yeah,
cocaine
exactly.
and hookers.
Yeah. Yeah. The baseball bat, evidently. So it the one of the more interesting stories. So I was watching, Lacey was sitting next to me, we were watching this, and she said, so I'll pose this question to you. Why has Vince McMahon been able to stay in business at the top as long as he has? Why is it there's never been? I mean, yes, there was WCW, but really they were a competitor truly for 83 weeks.
Yeah.
Why is it Vince McMahon has stayed at the top? Now I have my answer. I want to hear yours.
Ruthless aggression. That's what it is. It's ruthless aggression. Sure, he has money, but he's not afraid to go for the kill.
See, I actually put it not on him. I put it on a lack of focused competition. That's when the few times when somebody's been able to focus, when Bischoff was able to focus and he had a plan and the money, and then but it was obvious that that plan was very short term, and that plan
short-lived,
was it was had the ingredients to fall apart after 83 weeks, which is what mm-hmm. happened. And now we actually have AEW, so it is going to be very interesting in 10 years to see where that lands.
Yeah,
but you know, she's like, why has he been able to stop, you know, stay at the top? And I'm looking at UWF. It's because nobody who has had the money to threaten Vince McMahon or to start up something of their own to try to compete with him,
mm-hmm.
nobody's had the singular vision, or they just haven't had the money to compete. Like in the case of the Dino Bravo one, where, you know, they were local and they never had the means to be more than local.
Yeah. And I think that was a case in the territory days kind of across the board is, yeah, they were holding things down in their territory, but when Vince comes in and starts swooping your stars, and you're like, same thing happened to AWA,
mm-hmm.
you know, they were trying to compete on a more national level. They moved their TV tapings from, I think, Minneapolis to Vegas
mm-hmm.
in their waning days, and even with the deal with ESPN, they couldn't do it. And they didn't have the star power.
There is even, I mean, look, and going back to what you said, ruthless aggression, that's obviously like, you know, Vince McMahon, he was no pushover. It's not like anybody could have come and seen him. As soon as Andre showed up, what did he do? He busted out his checkbook and he brought back Andre. So, yes, there is totally, you know, you do lay probably most of it at Vince McMahon and his ruthless aggression and how he responds when his back is up against the wall. We've seen Vince McMahon can respond, but he's also been helped, I think, by the fact that whenever there's been competition, they shoot themselves in the foot. I'm on page 400-something of this Nitro book, and I'm in the thick of the Russo days. I'm reading up on Bash of the Beach right now.
Oof.
And it's like there could have been any number of ways WCW could have held it together. And in the end, who knows if, you know, at the end of the day when the AOL thing went through, you know, the bottom line is people there didn't like it. But, you know, it also didn't help that they had lost or on the books anyways. Bischoff says because of the way they structured their budget within Turner, he was like, I don't really think we lost $61 million in 1999. But yeah, that they were running at a deficit of $61 million in their last year, 2000. I think it was 99. He says we weren't listed as a line item. We were listed as other. And so there was a lot of stuff that was going into that other, and a lot of it probably didn't have anything to do with WCW. That's Bischoff's take on it.
And so,
you know, you read about the stuff with Russo, you know, and it's just, it's like, God, that dude could not help but just shoot himself in the foot over and over and over again. And again, they had the money, they had the resources, the lack of a focused plan killed WCW. In the end, that's what it was. You know, it's like they offered Hogan that ridiculous deal, shooting themselves in the foot.
Yeah. Yeah. It would have been interesting if Herb Abrams hadn't approached Vince about promoting on the West Coast, or if he hadn't had the type of reaction that he did, where he's got his own upstart promotion, you know, run a handful of shows, maybe go to Vince and say, hey, you know, let us handle your business on the West Coast. Of course, Vince, you know, he's going to say no to that.
Yeah,
he's already well established on the West Coast. He's not going to delegate any of his booking opportunities there to somebody else.
Yeah.
But if Herb Abrams had just said, all right, well, let's just build our own thing here on the West Coast, make this as solid as possible and go from there rather than going for the kill immediately, you know, maybe things would have been different to build things up in a more organic fashion.
Yeah.
I do want to know where in Reseda they were shooting, though, because they did mention it was in Reseda somewhere.
I know. Yeah. Our kind of tangential old stomping grounds. Crap. I had a point. Oh, one thing I was going to mention with regards to WCW, because there was also, if you think about it, TNA. Look at all the talent TNA had, man.
Yeah.
And they were like on the verge. And then what did they do? They brought in Hogan. They brought in Russo. They brought in Bischoff. They shot themselves in the foot.
Yeah, they thought bringing in those guys would push them to the next level. Instead, it set them back.
Yep, exactly. And that was only one of many problems there. But again, lack of a focused vision, a long-term vision.
Well, I think Jeff Jarrett seemingly had a vision for it in the early days. It was money issues he ran into.
Yeah.
And that's when he had to bring in Dixie and stuff. And that's one thing the vision aspect probably got a bit muddled.
Yeah, exactly. So that really was kind of an interesting thought watching this UWF, because seemingly the wrestlers, you know, not the wrestlers wanted an additional place to work. Why wouldn't they? Why wouldn't they want 2, 3, 4 companies all battling over talent, you know, because the only person of
everybody.
The talent's going to make out like gangbusters in that situation.
Got that right.
So that was one of the more interesting sort of concepts looking at the UWF documentary. But my God, yeah, it was just there's just a lot of cocaine in this episode.
Yeah, a lot of cocaine, a lot of sex.
Pretty much.
A lot.
No, I was thinking about WCW. I was reading something the other day. Raven had an interview about his career in general, and there's been sound bites coming out of it. WrestleTalk had some stuff, but and I think one of the WrestleTalk pieces was had to do with
when Vince brought him back.
No. That was I think we had both heard that.
Yeah, we'd heard that before.
But and I know we had heard this before, but it sort of hammered it home. You and I really started getting back into it in 96, 97. When Revenge, the video game, came out, and Raven was on the cover. Being relatively new to it, but still having watched it for probably, a year or so, I guess, at that point. I didn't bat an eye at Raven being on the cover. I thought Raven was like a big deal. He had his own flock. He, like, they gave him lots of time, lots of promos.
Yeah. Yeah.
It never occurred to me that there was a question that he was on there with Hogan and who's it? Hogan, Nash, DDP, maybe, with like the main event scene. But apparently the developer, whoever the marketing guy was, really liked Raven, so they put him on there. But to me, I was always just like, yeah, Raven's on there because Raven's hot shit. Man.
Yeah, he was incredible.
Even Flo DDT, man.
Hell yeah, man.
So like when you look back on that stuff and you're like, oh my God. And we all know this. The sheer level of mid-card talent that just stayed in the mid-card is obscene.
It's crazy, man. It's crazy. The number of eventual main eventers that were mid-card talents at WCW is insane.
They had Jericho, Guerrero, and Benoit all just in the cruiserweight division.
And Mysterio.
That's insane. That's crazy. That is crazy. Do you imagine, because they were talking about Bash at the Beach and how I think it was Russo or Bischoff talked about how I think it was Russo, because he wanted to know who the wrestlers thought. Mm-hmm. This is according to Russo, so who knows? He wanted to know from the wrestlers who the locker room thought should be the world champion, and every one of them pointed at Booker T. They all pointed at Booker T, and so Russo was like, okay, that's the guy then. And that's when we saw Booker T, you know, sort of emerge. But it's like, yeah, you got Booker T there. It's like, you have all this talent.
Yeah.
And then look at what happened, because there was a lack of a focused division there.
Mm-hmm.
And you had Hogan's contract just killing everything.
The albatross, yeah.
It was like that Bash of the Beach thing. It was just endless negotiations with him and his lawyers over the finish to the match. That's obscene.
Yeah, that's obnoxious. Crazy.
But
that's
obnoxious. The UWF, it was interesting stuff, but like, you know, you never get the idea or the impression that like they were ever going to be a real threat to anything. You know,
no, because they might have had a decent roster, but in terms of the presentation of their television show, like I understand, like on Raw, WWF had like the Ico Pro banners, like the vinyl banners and stuff, but at least they looked like well done.
Yeah,
just I think based on the design of the UWF logo and the nature of the banners they had made. It didn't look at that same level.
Yeah. My favorite bit was when Foley said, yeah, I went to Herb's office and he said, hey, this is going to blow people's minds. And he was like, oh, cool. There's some like wrestling talent that he got.
Yeah.
And he busts out some bright yellow cowboy boots with UWF like branded into them. Mm-hmm. And he was like, he actually thought that people were going to pop. They were going to go crazy for his cowboy boots.
For his yellow boots. Yeah, it was for the Vegas show. Yeah. It was funny seeing Foley drop a promo in like 1990.
Yeah, I know.
That one little clip of promo.
Yeah. And I like how he was like, you know, I saw those empty seats and all I thought was that's more places to do stuff.
Yeah.
And he got to fight Snuka. So like people have like fond memories of it, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But given within the context of, like, Foley obviously has been everywhere. This is probably just a blip on the radar for him, and the kicker at the end when they said, where would Herb Abrams be today? Or what would he be doing today? And Foley gets his big grin on his face and says, time. There's no way he wouldn't be in jail if he was still alive today. And hurting nobody but himself.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it was a fascinating look into a guy who had a lot of passion for cocaine and wrestling and hookers and people seemingly.
I wonder how commonplace stories like that were in the late 80s, early 90s, when, you know, there was still a great deal of excess where people had a lot of money and were pursuing things and were ultimately undone by their own excess, you know?
Probably endless. One of the funny things that it struck me as funny was, sorry, what was the name of the heavy dude who was the manager?
Oh, shoot.
And he reenacted the,
when he checked into his suite in Beverly Hills and Herb comes in with a couple of,
hold on. I'll have it right here.
I'm trying to remember. It's on the tip of my,
oh, here we go. Marty Yesberg.
Yeah.
I think that was him.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it even says it here. So I'm looking at 411mania.com. They always have like extensive recaps here. So I just go to that instead of taking my own notes. my favorite little comment here. It was so under. He said he was in. So Marty is a dude from the Carolinas. He's South Carolina.
South Carolina, yeah.
And he said as he was coming up, he heard about a mark out of California that was throwing him out around money with the UWF. It always amuses me when these wrestlers refer to fans with money with a vision as marks, because, and then he goes out there. And then he ends up being a mark for Hollywood because he's like, and then there's some escorts, some call girls, some hookers, but they weren't the snaggletooth call girls. We're talking about Hollywood honeys. I'm like, who's the mark now? All this guy has to do. And here's a funny thing. Like the Hollywood honeys, they probably really weren't all that special either.
Well, the funny thing about all that too is that once Herb brings out the cocaine, and the dude's like, all right, SWAT team's coming. Yeah. I want nothing to do with this.
Like, how many, this guy has seen a lot of movies and a lot of episodes of Miami Vice at this point to know that if there's cocaine, like the cops immediately know. And they're
it's
got to
be a sting operation at that point, you know?
Exactly. So like they just turn into these like innocent little boys who are like, oh, we got to get out of here. We're going to be in trouble. When it was like, you know, probably just another day for Herb Abrams.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I like that Herb really wanted to, he really wanted to do away with Vince McMahon. He wanted to crush Vince McMahon. Like, obviously, he came nowhere near that.
No.
And, like, to see his face during the pay-per-view, how dejected he was over, like, the turnout.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was just sad, but man, it was pretty comical too.
I think the next one is on the Road Warriors, I believe.
Yeah, that should be interesting.
Yeah,
that should be pretty decent.
Angle they're going to take with that one. So
yeah, that should be good. So, anyways, join us for that, and then of course, when are we putting this one up tomorrow, Saturday?
Yeah, we can put up some point Saturday. So Sundays. Is all about Money in the Bank. Free.
Okay, yep. Cool. Yep. So, tomorrow, check out. We're going to be doing our live reactions at Money in the Bank. Join us then. Big Red's going to be on the line, man. Maybe you'll bring him home. Would you at least put him in the background of your shot?
I'd have to get approval for that. Since this is my bedroom.
Oh,
this isn't my
man.
Space. This is all shared right. space.
All right.
The bed is to my left over here.
Well.
Just off frame.
Maybe, listen, I'll talk to my wife. She'll talk to your wife. We'll get it sorted out, man. We'll get it sorted
Whenever
out.
Whenever you say that's oh, gosh, it's so irritating.
Oh, I know.
It's the worst. It's really the worst.
Anyways, we'll talk to you guys later.
Bye.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today. The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.